Welcome to Make and Decorate, a podcast for makers who love to sew, quilt, knit, and decorate. Hello and welcome, everyone. If you're new, I am Stephanie, and this podcast is a long conversational format. I've got alternating solo and guest episodes. We're six seasons in, and today's episode, there will be a chit-chat segment after the guest segment. Also, this episode probably will be the last one for season six. However, I might pop back in with an episode or two over the summer. So keep your notifications on for the Make and Decorate with Stephanie podcast so you don't miss anything. This episode is also available in video format on my YouTube channel at Make and Decorate. There's going to be two of the same episode on my YouTube channel. The first one is the audio only because that automatically uploads now when there is an episode published. The second one is the full video version, and that one's kind of fun, so you might want to check that out. I want to take a moment to thank my patrons over at Patreon. And I just want to say thank you for your continued support and love for this podcast. It really means so much to me. And I recently published the April Patreon episode with guest Ames. She was on the last episode of the main podcast, and she continued to talk with me on an episode just for the patrons. And she shares behind the scenes and a look into her personal approach to sewing, including what she likes to sew and fabrics that she loves. And it's at patreon.com/makeanddecorate. Okay, are you ready for this? I am doing my first Instagram live the day that this episode publishes. At 10:30 a.m. Central Standard Time, the guest of this episode, Jenny Grover, is hosting an Instagram Live, and I am her guest. This is so exciting, and I hope if you're available, you can pop onto this live video to watch Jenny and I talk about podcasting, wellness, and creativity. We might talk about like my process and balancing the creative part of my intersecting hobby and professional life. If you follow me on Instagram, you will see the invite to this live event, and you just click to join. And if same thing, if you follow at Coach Jenny Grover, Jenny with an I, you will also see the live event start. So if you don't follow me yet, head on over to Instagram and please follow me. It's at stephanie.socha.design, and the link is in the show notes. Let me give you a quick bio of my guest. This is taken from her about page, and she's such a great writer that I am going to read it right to you. Jenny Grover is a wellness coach for makers, an author, and quilter. She cares deeply about the intersection of craft and health, coaching clients' physical, mental, social, creative, and spiritual concerns. Jenny is also a past president and current board member of the Chicago Modern Quilt Guild and a passionate craft journalist, having written for Quilt Folk, Craft Industry Alliance, SusieQuilts.com, and Quiltmaker magazine. A lifelong writer, Jenny has more than 34 years of experience in print, broadcast, and online media. She has been a professional speaker since 1996. Jenny has lived with multiple chronic illnesses and chronic pain since 1997 and has devoted much of her life to advocating for those like her. Her book, Chronic Babe 101, How to Craft an Incredible Life Beyond Illness, has helped countless folks feel better. Follow Jenny online at Coach Jenny Grover or visit her website, CoachJennyGrover.com, and it's Jenny with an I. After the guest segment, I will do the chit-chat segment, but first we will have some music leading into the guest segment. This song is 3 minutes and 38 seconds long and is called Dare to Live, performed by Scarlett Solo. I think it really relates well to the topics that Jenny and I chat about today, so I hope you enjoy it, or you can just fast forward.
I can see you down again, falling to the ground again, I feel you. Try to fight it on your own. I'll help you light your fire, I'll take your hand, raise you up higher. You can dance.
Today, I have a returning guest, Jenny Grover, wellness coach for makers. Welcome back, Jenny. I am really happy to chat with you again. It's been a long while since you were first on the show. So hello, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me again. You know, I love to be on the show.
Yes. And I love talking with you. I think we would love to chat with everybody so much more often in our busy lives, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, and I haven't been to Quilt Guild meetings lately because of some stuff we'll talk about. And I haven't, so I've been missing your face. So it's good to see you too.
You too. So, okay. Since it has been a while, because Jenny has been on the show before, but it's been well over a year. And so for people who haven't heard your story, just maybe recap a bit about your story of health and creative hobbies and wellness.
Sure. Thanks. Yeah. Well, so
into what you're doing today. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, so I've always been a creative person since I was a little kid. I mean, I think all people are very creative when they're kids. Like, I think we're born with that innate creative energy. And luckily, I kept nurturing it and other people helped me nurture it. So even into young adulthood, I was making zines as a hobby and doing weird makeup and going to weird dance parties and just always finding ways to be creative. And then in my mid-20s, I got sick with a bunch of different chronic health things. So I got diagnosed within about a year with fibromyalgia, anxiety, depression, asthma, Raynaud's phenomenon, which is like a circulatory disease. It was just a bunch of things all at the same time. And it just utterly changed my life. I went from being a person who could go running and swim, you know, laps for 45 minutes without stopping and dancing on tables at parties and stuff to like not being able to walk more than a couple blocks at a time. Just really struggling to be able to function. So it shifted my career and it shifted my work. So after a few years of like getting more comfortable with all these illnesses and managing them, getting a lot of help with that, I started doing advocacy work under the name Chronic Babe. And I tried to make it fun and silly, but also inspiring and nurturing, and try to teach other young women like me how to live well in spite of illness. Some people can remember a time when the blogging was new. So that's when I started that work, was like blogging was a new thing. And for a woman in her 20s to be writing, and early 30s to be writing online about chronic health experiences was incredibly rare. Like, I knew all the people doing it and I could count them on one hand, you know? So that was a really giant creative healing act for me to create that work to help others. But it was a very creative process for me to design a website and a newsletter and start giving talks and things like that. So that was, I did that work for 16 years and I loved it so much. And I also got really burnt out because living in a body with chronic illness and then working on things about chronic illness. And then naturally, so many of my friends have chronic illness and we would talk about it when we would hang out. And it was like my whole world was about illness and I hit a wall. I didn't want my whole world to be about illness anymore. So I made a decision in 2019 to shift careers and to start focusing, it was training and then focusing on coaching and with a wellness approach, which doesn't mean ignoring illness. It just, it's, and it might seem like semantics to some people, but I shifted my self-belief from a person who I've always thought of myself as a sick person, and through a lot of therapy work and kind of working on myself, started to think of myself as a well person who had happened to have a bunch of stuff going on, you know? It was this mindset shift for me that had me start to feel like I had more options, that I was coming at it from a more positive angle, certainly not ignoring all the negative stuff, but it was just a mindset shift for me that really, really, really helped. And so then I began coaching and I decided to focus on makers because y'all are my people. And so doing wellness coaching, teaching people how to feel as well as possible, physically, mentally, socially, creatively, spiritually, to me means being a well-rounded creative person. And that's what I try to be in my life, and being able to bring that work to other people. It's like I get coached every time I coach someone. Every time I teach a class, I'm taking the class with you. You know what I mean? So that's like the quick and dirty of my journey from.
It's great. And it's you know, like you said, 16 plus years ago, it really wasn't like out there as a thing. I mean, even like anxieties and depression and stuff like that was still sort of like you kept it close to the vest because people think that you're flawed and weird in some way.
Yeah. And actually, so like I started that work in 2004. So it's been 20 mm-hmm. years now since I started that work and even was envisioning it in 2003. So, I mean, and that was around the time that was shortly after I had left my last full-time job and started my own company. And I was fearful to some degree that potential clients or clients would see me talking about that I have chronic illness, that I have anxiety, that I have depression and not want to hire me. And it was a really big leap of faith for me to say, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to talk about this publicly. It's going to help people. And if a client doesn't want to work with me because I have anxiety, their loss. Like that's how I felt. I was a lot younger. I felt more courageous maybe. I don't know. I'm pretty courageous now, but I just was like, oh, whatever, screw them. I mean, I definitely was like, I knew it was not going to be a problem, but it's uncomfortable. It was uncomfortable at first. And definitely I had people say to me, like the most hurtful thing I think someone said, a family member said to me, you're attention seeking. Like you're talking about your stuff publicly. All you want is attention. And I was like, of course I want attention. I'm trying to advocate for people whose voices are constantly silenced. So yes, you're right. I am attention seeking.
You're calling attention to these issues that people deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And are feeling what you're feeling without a validation and being heard.
Yeah.
And absolutely. When I first met you, I first met you at least 10, 12 years ago, right?
It was about 10 years ago. Yeah.
10 years ago.
Yeah.
And that's right when you just were publishing your book, Chronic Babe.
Yeah,
and,
that's right.
I had already been going through, like, I mean, your illness came upon you so young in your 20s. And it's really like that's the time where you're supposed to be your most robust. And, you know, everybody around you is just like, you know, you're going to 40 and loving life. And I had something, you know, hit me like in my early mid 30s. And so when I met you, it might have been right before or after my gallbladder surgery. And so it gave me like all of that built up with chronic illness for myself. But I couldn't believe that you had published a book and you're like so freely talking about it. And I was just like, but we're not supposed to, like, people think we're crazy.
Yeah. I mean, there are still folks and generations a little bit older than us. Like I'm 51 and I have friends in their 60s and 70s and some 80s. And like I was hanging out with someone the other day and we were talking over lunch and she unfortunately has a cancer diagnosis and she kind of leaned in and whispered cancer every time and looked around as though like someone would see taboo. Her and judge her. And I wanted to just be like, please don't hide it. There's nothing to be ashamed of. It's just, you know, 1 in 2 people in the United States, it's the only country I know the stats for, but 1 in 2 people in the US lives with some kind of chronic illness. Literally half the people. And 1/3 of the people in the US has some kind of chronic pain condition at some point in their life. So you can't throw a stick in a room full of people and not hit a bunch of people. Please don't throw sticks. But you know what I mean? Like they're all around us. And what I learned in my Chronic Babe work and in really like kind of shoving my creativity into it was that the weirder I got with it and the more vocal I got with it, the more people were coming out of the woodwork and saying, thank you so much. I didn't know it was okay to talk about this stuff. I'm becoming a better self-advocate. And like, yes, I'm winning. That's exactly, we're all winning. That's what I want. It took me a few years to be my own best advocate. And then once I learned how to do it, I wanted to help other people do it because there's no reason to be quiet about this stuff.
But I'm in the same age group as you. And I was raised with that boomer mentality of parents where you do not talk and display your dirty laundry out.
That's right.
Also in the workforce. That can go on your human resource record, and it is a stain. It is an indelible stain, and you will never be hired. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, so you just, it's like you just keep that right here, and you just don't.
Yeah. and that's, you know what? If you want to paint within the lines your whole life, great, go for it. That's not, I'm definitely not going to tell people they have to be a certain way. Mm-hmm. But I can tell you from my experience, and I, in my chronic babe years, all those years, I coached and taught tens of thousands of people, took workshops, which came to lectures, you know, emailed me, were part of membership, like you name it, tens of thousands of people.
Yeah.
And I have only ever had like maybe like two or three people come to me and say, I hate your method. I don't like it. It's not working for me. Okay, fine. Then don't do
it.
It's not for everyone.
Yeah. I say,
it's not for everyone.
My podcast too. I mean, only one person commented, but it was like, she rambles and whatever. And I'm like, so, and maybe I do, but some people like it. If you don't, then move on to whatever other podcast that
feel free to not
listen. 10 minutes long. There you go.
You know, I'm thinking about, so like in recent years, almost 6 years ago to the day, and in like a week and a half is my 6 year soberversary, that I'm 6 years sober. And I also did not talk about that. I did not talk about it with anyone besides like my best friends and my recovery community for the first 2 years. And then I started talking about it, and I was so scared, Stephanie. I was like, I know people are going to not want to work with me. And, you know, the thing is, it's better to work with me now than it was when I was drinking every day.
Right? Yeah. But,
you know, the irony there. Oh my God. But I started talking about it. I was at a conference, and it was a conference for people with chronic pain and doctors. It was a clinical and patient approach, which was pretty cool. And I was on a panel, and we were talking about vulnerability as a superpower, as a patient advocate. And I was like, I think this is the moment, and I'm going to say it in front of hundreds of my colleagues and a recorded, you know, thing that streamed out to who knows how many people. And I said, well, you know, one thing is that I'm sober, and we talk about this and talking about sobriety and talking about opioid use and talking about this stuff and whatever. And I was like shaking on the inside. I was trying to project real confidence, but I was losing it on the inside. Like, I thought I was going to hurl. I just was so afraid.
Yeah.
But after I talked about it and the panel was over, it was so scary. But so many people came up to me and thanked me for speaking openly about sobriety. And from what we know about sobriety statistics, there had to be many, many people in that room who don't drink, you know? And if that means that they feel seen and represented, or if it helps them feel like they have permission to talk about it in their life, then I'm so happy, because shame thrives in silence and secrecy. So I mean, I think it's better to talk about this stuff. I know lots of people disagree with me, but I think it's better.
Right. And then with wellness, I think that being a creative person, I know that I gravitate toward my crafts and hobbies for that cathartic feel, and to, you know, just, it calms me, relaxes me, and just gives me that stimulation, whereas, you know, some other people, it doesn't work for them. But so for you to, you know, latch onto that and incorporate the creative aspect of that with wellness goes hand in hand as well. And also when you do one-on-one coaching with even like business owners in the creative industry, because then you've got people who do the whatever quilt pattern making or quilting or whatever for their business, now their therapeutic thing mm-hmm. has become a job. So then
yes.
you got to deal with that side of it of
yeah, just yeah, I definitely have
a balance, mm-hmm. you know, and reinvigorating why they did that, started that in the first place. So that was one of the questions. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, many creative business owners, whether you're selling sewing patterns or making products to sell, or maybe you run a retail establishment where you're selling creative materials for people to use in their own hobby or art practice, you know, those folks have taken something they love really deeply on a personal level and turned it into work. And I see nothing wrong with that. But one thing that often happens is they lose their own creative mojo mm-hmm. and then it becomes a slog and they lose.
Hey everyone, I am back for a little bit of chit chat. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Yeah. And if you did, it would just make my day if you would send me a quick email or DM on IG, Instagram to say hi, like I just said. All right. Yes. So
yeah,
there's really not much to chitter chat about this time. I've not done a single sew, quilt, knit anything in the past 2 weeks for a couple of reasons. One of them is that I've been busy preparing to attend the H&H Americas show next week. It is here in Chicagoland. I've been going since it started, which is fairly new in America. It's been around in Cologne for over 40 years, but it's been here for, I think this might be the third year in the row, maybe fourth.
We're depleted of time and energy.
But anyway, it's right here, so I'm glad that I'm able to go.
It
is a
trade
show only. It's really similar to Quilt Market in Houston, even though I've never been to Quilt Market. But the gist of it is, it's you know, for businesses. The show is, this H&H America show is much more expansive in the handmade industry. There will be knitting, sewing, and quilting vendors with new products, yarns, fabrics, gadgets, and machines at this show. It's really exciting. And this year, they've added a day of lectures and workshops for content creators, including podcasters like myself. I am going to do my best to take photos and maybe some videos to share with you. It is a jam-packed schedule. These shows are so intense. There's a lot of people there, and it has some really exciting moments and people that I get to meet.
You could just talk about me because and then
I am completely depleted.
Not a morning person.
Because of just, there's
coffee,
a lot of walking.
And it takes me about
talking,
an hour to
walking
just,
and talking and talking and talking
like
and talking.
It's like my ritual routine. It's like what I have to do. And if it's not done that way, and I've, let's say, like, you know, I've got this early, whatever, doctor appointment or whatever, and I got to get up at like 6 or 5:30 and everything's in a rush. The rest of my day is just kind of like, frazzled.
But
yes,
go ahead.
Yes. Well, okay. So, I mean, if you want, we could talk about you specifically. We could lean into that.
Why not? Because then you're not violating.
Well, so I wouldn't ever want to tell you that your ritual is wrong. You know, I wouldn't want to tell you like you got to speed up or whatever, because that's not my place. If you were a client, I would ask you, you know, is there a part of that ritual that is not serving you anymore? And
good question. No, I'm good with that ritual.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. So then sometimes with clients, I ask them that question.
Okay. Here's one thing though. Maybe I extend it sometimes. So that might be putting like a cap on it.
Yeah.
But.
So when you extend it, what are you getting out of that extension?
I could tell you right away, because I know what I'm doing. I'm procrastinating getting started on my day.
Okay.
I don't want to do it. And usually that's on a Monday, and it really starts on Sunday night. I do not like Sunday evenings. And I do that thing where I try to stretch the day and I stay up late and then can't get up. I'm like not, you know, enough sleep.
Okay.
And then it's procrastinating the day.
Okay.
So there you go.
Okay.
That's the only time when it doesn't serve me, when I do stuff like
that. Yeah. So I hear that. So then if we were coaching, I might then ask you, you know, what brings you to extend that Sunday night? Or what is it that you don't love about Sundays? And you might offer an answer. And then we might think about, sometimes it's a perspective shift. Like if it's a belief that you have about Sundays, well, you tell me, what's your belief about Sundays for you that makes you want to draw the day out?
The day is okay. It's the evenings. It hits me in the evenings when it's like, you got to start changing your mindset for the week. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I'm just like, I don't want to face it yet. But because Sunday, all right. So growing up, you know, it's like Sunday was also the day of rest.
Yeah.
So you feel good with it and stuff. And then you're like, oh, I don't want to. It's not like that every time, but I think it's when I know I have a lot going on during the week and I'm like, oh my gosh, how am I going to get through all this?
Yeah.
Let's say I've just overbooked or I'm just too, you know, or I have this deadline or something like that. That's usually when I'm starting to really feel it. It's like when it's crunch time. And then
I hear you.
Yeah. So then I feel guilty and that because I'm trying to avoid it all. And maybe if I had put a little bit more prep time, maybe ahead of time, but no, I tried to like bury that until it's absolutely necessary for me to deal with it. So I'll pull out my knitting and, you know, just try to ignore it.
So there's like a lot going on there. Like one thing is maybe you're packing your week too full and then it feels overwhelming. So then the question is, are there things during the week that I can remove so that I don't feel, it's called revenge procrastination.
Yes.
Have you heard this term before?
I have heard it just in the last year. And I'm
so it's kind of a newer term in psychological. Listen, I've never done that. For anybody who's only listening, you can't see my smirk. So, revenge procrastination is this vibe. Like for me, it's the teenager in me. She's like pissy because it's Sunday night and she doesn't want to go to school tomorrow. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like I'm seeking my revenge on the week by staying up late and doing what I want to do. But when I'm doing that, I'm kind of shooting myself in the foot because then I'm super tired Monday morning. And then Monday morning at school kind of drags. I don't pay good attention. I don't take good notes. Then I struggle on my homework. Like it can
the domino effect. Yeah.
Yeah. So like for some folks, when that kind of thing is happening, that kind of procrastination, sometimes it means making that Sunday feel more intentional and more delicious and more comforting and more fun, but packing it into a shorter amount of time. And then saying, I'm going to say at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, I'm putting the devices away. I'm going to set a 30-minute timer. I'm going to light a candle or whatever you want to do to start setting the mood. And that's when I encourage people to consider trying to go to bed early so that they feel ready the next morning to jump into the week. Yeah. I know that's not always possible. You know, like I have my best friend's a single mom of two, like she works full time. I mean, that's just like not possible for her. Right. But that revenge procrastination is that little kid in us that just like doesn't want to do the things that aren't as much fun. But then they make teenage kid choices which don't serve us.
I think it runs in our family too, because my brother just visited. We had dinner with us and he was talking about how he plans down to the minute minute and second of the time that's going to take him to get ready. Blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh my gosh, I do the same thing.
Okay.
Know how long it's going to take me to get ready. And then I can like either, you know, whatever. It's like, in other words, we don't pad time in there for just like really, you know, just like breathing in between. It's just like, wait, go.
So like I get that and I can be that way too, especially during work days. But for me, I'll just speak for me. What happens when I do that is I don't get enough downtime and then I feel kind of panicky and intense.
Yeah.
And then mm-hmm. I bring that intensity and anxiety to everything I'm doing. And then everything feels like a potential failure. And wow, mm-hmm. those are shitty days. Like that does not feel good.
You're right.
So a thing I've learned is that I have to intentionally build in more breaks. I need more breathing room. Like mm-hmm. I can't schedule clients back to back. I need breathing mm-hmm. room. And maybe I only need 5 minutes and then I can do some other administrative task in between client sessions or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I want that option. And that's where I think the revenge procrastination is against this feeling of I don't have options. Like this is set for me. I don't have agency. Like if you think back to being a teenager, I didn't have a choice. You go to school Monday morning. That's mm-hmm. There's a time you got to be there. That's it. End of discussion. Mm-hmm. But as adults and like for you and me as entrepreneurs, we have agency, we have choices. And so giving ourselves more space to relax, to rest, to do some hand sewing or knitting or whatever, take little breaks throughout the day actually fuels us to feel more ready to tackle the harder things. So it's, what's the word I'm thinking of? It's kind of paradoxical in a sense, you know, we live in this very like capitalist, late stage capitalist society where our focus is on productivity. And so I struggle with this a lot. I have to push back against it all the time. Like my calendar should be full all the time. I should always be working. If I'm not working, I'm lazy.
Yes.
And
yes.
Right. And the thing is, that's bullshit.
My next question, how do we assuage feelings of guilt for spending time on creative crafts and hobbies? So a lot of people will push away their hobbies because they feel the guilt. They feel the mom guilt or, you know, work guilt, whatever it is. Yeah. And then, you know, you're like, oh, I don't deserve to spend time on sewing.
Oh, yes. I would say that most of my clients come to me with that challenge. And so often it's about rethinking our perspective on our place and our culture, our place as a woman or a man or whatever your gender is, a place as a parent or not parent, as a working person, entrepreneur, whatever, rethinking our perspective on that. So, you know, I come from like a more, like I was a journalist and we work all the time. And then I worked in an association and we work all the time. And like, you're not worthy if you're not hustling all the time. And then when I started my company, I hustled all the time. Some days I would call 20 people cold call to try to get new clients. I mean, I just hustle, hustle, hustle. There's not anything inherently wrong with that, but we're human beings. We're not robots. And so we need rest and we need creativity and we need downtime. And so it's a shift in perspective of thinking of creativity, not as just this like fluffy hobby thing, but as a way that we take care of ourselves. The same way we drink water and take our medicine and get a checkup and exercise, all those things, creativity is part of that. It's, you know, to come back to what we talked about at the beginning, as kids, we're born with this inherent creativity, this creative impulse to just get weird and experiment and try things and investigate. And we don't want to lose that. As adults, it kind of gets squished out of us. We have to fight to kind of get it back. And so that revenge procrastination is like that kid part of you that's like pissed off. Like, I don't get to have fun. I don't want to do that. So I'm going to stretch out my Sunday and squeeze in as much fun time. If we can try to find ways throughout the day to squeeze in more of that, then it doesn't feel as urgent to, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I have clients who, I was thinking about this one client who would spend an hour every morning reading the newspaper. And the thing is, she would read the newspaper. It would get her all worked up and stressed out about a world things that she has no control over. And so not only was she spending that hour, and as a journalist, this is painful to say, but I'm going to say we investigated the idea of not reading the newspaper every day because it was an hour of time. And then all she did was feel stressed out and out of control. And so then she carried that energy into her whole day. And it's like sometimes you got to look at the things in your routine and ask yourself, how's this serving me? Is there anything here that I can get rid of so I can put in more creative time? You know, like here's a really simple thing. I don't wash my hair every day. It takes an extra 20 minutes to wash my hair and style it. And I'd like that 20 minutes back. So I wash my hair like twice a week and I have it cut really short.
Some people, it's not good to wash your hair every day because it strips your hair of oils.
Absolutely.
Unless you have greasy hair. Like, that's it.
Yeah, totally. So like there's little things like that in our day that if so to come back to this idea of time tracking, it's not sexy. It's not really fun. People only need to do it for a couple of days and they will see a pattern. They will notice places. They'll be like, you know, I actually thought that I was only sitting down to watch a 25-minute TV episode. And actually I watched four of them. And it's like, okay, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. Cause I binge TV too. But if you want to grow your creative practice, then maybe you want to scale it back and say, I'm going to watch one episode a day. And then the rest of the time I'm going to create. Or whatever, but it's, we have to get honest with ourselves about how we're spending our time and looking at where we can recapture some fun, creative energy, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Good. You know, and I recently, spoke with a creative business owner who sews. She sews clothing. She has a family with a couple small children and a growing business of her own. Yet, she carves out time to sew for herself on a regular guilt-free basis.
Oh yeah.
And she fully enjoys it. And I took a lot away from that conversation. And I mean, I actually even got a little emotional about it because I'm like, it's very rare to speak to someone who is so confident about it. And I mean, literally, no, I sew for myself. Guilt-free. And, you know, she is lives in another country, a different culture. And I said, wow, you know, and this is my opinion, but it is so American to just like have that guilt of, just always you have to be produce. And social media has even heightened that. You know, but I just was like taken aback by her she was chill. She was confident in herself and was enjoying life and her family and her business, you know, had the balance. So
so what that tells me, I mean, you touched on it, it is a uniquely American thing to be like, if I'm not producing, who am I, what's my worth? And we look at some of these other countries where they have like 2 months or a month of vacation or 2 months of vacation and have all these flexibility and childcare at work and all these other things designed to help them be a fuller, more satisfied, joyful human being. And it doesn't, their productivity, air quotes, does not falter because of that. In fact, we often are better creatively. So imagine this. Imagine I'm a wellness coach for creative people. I'm here like talking with clients about how to shape their creative practice. Imagine if I wasn't doing my own creative work for myself. Like I wouldn't have even the knowledge to draw on to guide my clients because I wouldn't be doing my own work. And I wouldn't be a satisfied, happy person. And then I'm just not going to be fun to be around. So like when I work with clients that are particularly still stuck in the productivity mode, I then talk to them about how could they use their own creative practice as a way to generate work. And what I mean by that is like sometimes I'll look at experiences I have when I'm doing my quilting and I will think, oh, there's a lesson in here that I can use with my clients. And so sometimes if we look at our own creative work, we can pull lessons from it to use in our paid work. I'm not saying commodify every hobby or your craft or your art, but if you're really feeling like, oof, I feel so much guilt, one way to baby step into it is just think about what is this practice that I'm doing for me, teaching me that I can then share with my clients. Like for your design work, if you're designing something for yourself, if you're working on something for your home, is there a lesson here that I can impart to my clients? Or is there a story here that is great for the podcast? Like we can look for inspiration and bring it to other people. But truly, I love when people just say, I was just making a thing and it was for me and that's all. Because we deserve to be able to do that, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, it even goes to like the, you have to take care of yourself in order to care for others.
Oh, yeah.
And the other thing is, you know, it's a very popular thing to say and people are doing of just take 15 minutes and do part of your project. Mm-hmm. And if you do it, you'll have a completed project, you know, sooner than later. And some people think of that and are super busy and they're just like, oh, I just can't even 15 minutes. It just doesn't seem productive or it doesn't seem like, you know, but if you try it, because then I did try it. Cause even, Krista Watson even said, like with machine quilting, she's like, just take 10 minutes to practice and, you know, you'll see improvement so before you know it. And maybe you do have more than 15 minutes time and then you end up saying 30 minutes, you know? Yeah. So and then you're that much more relaxed and fulfilled with just that small amount of time.
Yeah, so, that is so true. That's so true.
Because I used to be one of those. I used to be like, it takes me 15 minutes to pull a project out. What's that gonna do?
Right. And so like, if you were my client, I'd say, okay, how do we keep your projects accessible so it doesn't take 15 minutes to pull
exactly.
out? You know what I mean? Like I'd say, okay, do you need a reorg of your sewing room or do you need a different storage capacity or whatever? You know, do you need a project management system so you know where everything is? Like we would talk that through. But yeah, I mean, I'm doing a hand sewing project right now that I started after my recent foot surgery and I couldn't get off the couch really. And I couldn't walk, couldn't sew on the machine, couldn't really do much of anything, but I could cut out with scissors, little tiny drunkard's path blocks and hand stitch them. And, over the course of a few weeks, I made like 150 of them because I just sat and I kept it. It's all in a little box with a handle. So I could take it to doctor's appointments. I could sit in the car with it when we went somewhere. I could keep it at my desk. Like if I wanted to, I could be sewing it right now while we record this. Like I made it handy and portable.
Yep.
And it only takes like 2 minutes to stitch up one of these blocks if everything's cut out. So it's like we can, it asks us to just shift our mindset a little bit and think about opportunities rather than this is like taking away from my productivity, you know?
Right. And also to place an importance to it as well. It's not frivolous. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, so, and I started carving out time for myself in the evenings, probably in the last couple of years only. And I can't tell you how much better that has been for me and how much more stuff I've been able to do. And now like I can't even like sit in the evenings just watching a television screen if I'm not doing something with my hands.
Yeah. And you know what, Stephanie, that we know more now than we did even than a few years ago about the mind-body benefits of repetitive hand crafting. One of the things we understand now that's pretty new, I don't know if you've heard of or your listeners have heard of EMDR. It stands for eye movement desensitization. I always forget what the R is, but EMDR is a technique used in trauma therapy. So now I did trauma therapy a few years ago, and so understand it. Well, I'm familiar with it. Scientists do not exactly understand why it works, but there is a thing that happens in our brains when we do bilateral work or an EMDR, like a therapist might take their finger and move it back and forth in a rhythmic way across your sight line. Some people have light boxes where the light goes back and forth. When we're handcrafting with our hands, knitting, crocheting, sewing, whatever, we're doing bilateral, for the most part, people who have two hands to do the work are doing bilateral movement. And that soothed something in our central nervous system that calms us down and takes us to a safe place. For those who are just listening, I'm moving my hands back and forth
She's
as I say
her
this.
Hands back and forth. Yeah.
and we don't know exactly why it works, but we know that it works.
Huh. That is very interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So if we want to ask ourselves, what's the key benefit of this? We can say mind, body, wellness. We can say that it is soothing to our central nervous system. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're a singer, when you sing, you are moving your airways and opening and closing, you know, filling and relaxing your lungs and your diaphragm. You are soothing your central nervous system through this repetitive, deeper breathing. Mm-hmm. You're That's calming true. Your body, you know, there's
so
lots
interesting.
Of ways.
That- yeah. Because everything you're saying there is actually, it requires you to move your body in some sort of way, mm-hmm. and not just sitting and staring at a screen. And
that's right.
A lot of us stare at a screen for work. So
yes,
I feel like, you know, it does, like, that's why I always say too, that, you know, these hobbies and handcrafts are still going to be around. Even if we turn into total Jetsons, flying cars in the air.
Yeah, right.
There's still a need for tactile things and to create with your hands. And like you said,
Absolutely.
With the singing, with your diaphragm, mm-hmm. I mean, your mm-hmm. so your body and mind, like you said, that association, I mm-hmm. really, truly believe that for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's really cool to see. I mean, people are studying the craft and art world more and seeing more and more benefits. And like when I went through trauma therapy a few years ago, you know, my therapist wasn't like, think harder about this and you'll figure it out. Like, work harder on this and you'll figure it out. What she said was, close your eyes. I'm going to put on some music and we're going to dance. And we moved our bodies and we, and then she prompted me and asked me questions. And then I got really emotional and I danced through it and there was a release, you know, and I was using my whole self, my mental and physical and spiritual self. And when we're crafting, when we're making things, that's what we're doing. And so we're healing ourselves. And you know, I think there's a lot of history of women in particular and sewing in particular as being quote unquote women's work and being less mm-hmm. worthy and totally unpaid. And we bring that centuries of history of misogyny with us into our craft today. And so I meet so many women in particular and some non-binary folks who will say to me, you know, I just feels frivolous. I can't find the utility in it. And that is an old way of thinking that disregards and disrespects the immense craft and genius and art mm-hmm. of women and what they make. And so even just as a feminist, I reject that. mm-hmm. And I say, you know, without those things, you wouldn't have quilts to sleep under, you wouldn't have clothes to wear on your body, you wouldn't have, you know, there's so many things that we wouldn't have as a culture without that quote unquote frivolous women's work.
Well,
and
even
so,
that extends to the kitchen as well. So you wouldn't be eating delicious foods. Mm-hmm. But I also think that centuries is like from America specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Again, my opinion, but because in Europe, tailors were men. And so it was chauvinistic that way, where a woman couldn't become a tailor. You know what I mean? So again, it's that misogyny, what you call it.
Yeah.
And and a lot of the arts and crafts with just throughout the years was taken seriously and compensated for to men, really. I mean, like carpentry, blacksmithing, all of those hand arts.
Mm-hmm. And then to add one more layer, not to go too far off the path, but
I know.
when we look at the fine art world, for almost the history of the fine art world in North America and in Europe, the focus has been on, you know, like painting, drawing, sculpture.
Yes.
Things like textiles were not considered to be art. Mm-hmm. And that is primarily because they were, quote unquote, women's work and they were not mm-hmm. worthy. Mm-hmm. And we know that there's exceptional brilliance and genius involved in complex quilt making. You can look at the art of Bisa Butler, for example. I went to her exhibit at the Art Institute of Chicago.
Amazing.
Incredible genius. Like,
yeah,
it made me weep. It was overwhelmingly complex and beautiful and heartful mm-hmm. and amazing. Mm-hmm. And so wonderful to see an institution like that recognize her art, mm-hmm. not only as a woman, but as a Black woman, and to put it face forward and say, this is really important. We're giving it a giant exhibition space. But that's new in the art world. That's a really recent shift to see textile art highlighted like that. Mm-hmm. And so again, you know, we're pushing against many cultural forces that tell us that handicraft, I'll use that word because it's a little bit like, it kind of has a stigma to it when we say handicraft. Yeah. But to that, you know, quilt making is my medium and people consider it a handicraft. It is an art form. And, mm-hmm. but I, for me to prioritize it and to feel like it's worth spending a lot of time on, I have to change my perspective on it. And then the culture will change just the same way as I had to change my perspective on having chronic illness and how I was going to be with it and talking about it and advocating. And then the culture has started to catch up with me. Mm-hmm. So I think it's like a radical act to prioritize our creativity, mm-hmm. to push it forward on like many levels.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll get off my soapbox now.
I totally agree and have just encountered thoughts of that. And also, like, I went to that Bisa Butler as well because it was in Chicago for some time. You know, and then that extends towards people who do their crafts, like making quilts or sewing clothing, and mm-hmm. People who are not part of our creative world don't see the value in it. And mm-hmm. when they are gifted things that are handmade,
and
they do not, they're like homemade, or they're embarrassed by it, or they like stuff it in a closet or whatever, trash. I mean, it's hurtful. It really, very much is so. But then, you know, they go off of your handmade list. You know what I mean? It's just like,
that's right.
That's just all there is to it. But for what you're saying is, it's starting to shift and people are starting mm-hmm. to see outside of our world. They are starting to see the value,
right.
The craftsmanship mm-hmm. of the art and the hobby is not just that. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's more than that.
I really do. For some creatives, like Bisa, I think is a great, I mean, the genius. Like when mm-hmm. I think people talk about Picasso and his genius, I look at her work and I see genius.
Yeah, you know? And Luke Haynes, he astounds me with his mm-hmm. quilts. And his work gets put on in museums too all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And Heidi Parks. So
yeah, her work is really exceptional.
Yeah, really, very much so.
And if you go to QuiltCon and go look at modern quilting, there are people mm-hmm. doing things with math that just, I mean, I mm-hmm. continually needed a math tutor just to barely pass to get through high school. It just wasn't it didn't work for me. But, you know, you see people doing these things that are so complex geometrically.
Liv Elliott, right?
Yeah. So
yeah, I was able to take one of her workshops here through the Quilt Guild several years ago. It was so much fun. And for someone who has that vision of all the zeros and ones, and she's got that mind,
mm-hmm.
The workshop was crazy. It was, it wasn't what you thought. It was very open and improvisational, yet with some dictations of like a number or something like that.
Yeah, it was some constraint.
Some constraints.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then what came out of it was one of a kind, and it looked really cool. And yeah.
And we would never look at Libs Elliott and say she's being frivolous.
We would never.
We would never do that. So it's like, I want all of us, I want everyone listening to think about that and think about how do you think about your favorite artist in your medium, and give yourself the same respect, you know, give yourself that same like awestruck, because whatever it is you're making is incredible. Mm-hmm. And there are lots of people, who will look at the simplest quilt I make and be like, I don't know how you did that. That's amazing. And I'm thinking, it's just straight lines. Like, it's no big deal.
But is amazing. I've seen that quilt in person, and it is like, and it's amazing to us who know how it was made, like quilted. So imagine people who don't, and they're looking at it, and then it's just like their mind is blown.
So if we could, if we can embody that feeling when we're thinking about our own creative work, we're like on the path to culture change when we're doing that for ourselves. So
I agree. Well, before we go, I want to talk about the many resources you have on your website, your online courses. You have a membership. So go ahead and let us have it.
Sure. Thank you so much. Well, so I offer a variety of ways to work with me. So I have one-to-one coaching where people work with me in, you know, hour-long sessions, and we do a deep dive on how we can help them feel better and more confident in their creative work, in their body, in their mind. And then I have multiple on-demand courses, one about called The Daily Creative, which is just about how to imbue your everyday life with creative energy, which is really in line with what we were talking about today. Mm-hmm. Like, how to feel creative about folding laundry is where we go. Like, and we make the mundane really fun. And I have a membership. Now, the membership has been temporarily paused because I've been retooling it, but I am launching it again in May. So if you go to my website, there's a place you can sign up and get an alert, because that is going to reopen again in May. And that is a very low cost. It's just $10 a month membership. But in the new iteration of it, we'll have an online community and little challenges and guest speakers and all kinds of stuff. So, and then quilt guilds hire me to give talks and lectures. I'm starting to book actually talks and like lectures at corporations. And I'm talking with a hospital right now about how, giving lectures about creative energy and self-care and how people can do that for themselves. So there's lots of different ways to work with me. And then I'm all over social media, and I have a free newsletter. So you don't have to pay a penny to get some Jenny fun. You get I try to make it accessible. So there's lots of options for people.
Yeah. And you're very generous.
Thanks.
And I do gravitate towards people who are like that. They're generous with their experience and knowledge, and you want to share with others, which is awesome.
You know, I feel the same way about you. I mean, anybody who does a podcast and puts this kind of energy and excitement and research and administration, which I know there's a lot of it, like, that's a passion, and you're bringing that forward to people. So we're in a mutual admiration society.
Awesome. Yay. Thank you so much. So the links to your website and Instagram will be in the show notes. And and Jenny doesn't even mind if you just, you know, pop on her Instagram and say hi. Or tell her that you listen to her on my podcast.
I, in fact, love it. It gives me so much joy. So people can find me at coachjennygrover.com. It's Jenny with an I, or Coach Jenny Grover on Instagram. And I love it when people come say hi. I love when they send me little pictures of what they're working on. My DMs are open. I'm chatting with people all day about all kinds of stuff. It gives me immense joy. So I hope people connect with me.
I love
it.
Me too. I'm always saying, just please say hi. I don't care. But I know people are very shy, because I'm one of them. Like, I know what it is to, like, not, you know, feel like you can reach out, but you can. you can, even just to
for sure
do the little wave icon. All right. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time. And Coach Jenny Grover, wellness coach. Yay.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. Mwah.
Hey there. I am back for the chit chat segment. And I don't have anything to update on what I've been working on as far as crafting and sewing and quilting, because I've been gearing up and preparing to attend the H&H Americas show, which is coming to the Chicagoland area next week. And there is a day for just for content creators like bloggers and podcasters. It is a trade-only show, similar to what Quilt Market is, the Quilt Market every year in Houston, that is pretty much just the quilting market. But the H&H Americas is for the handcrafted industry, which includes knitting, crochet, the fiber arts, sewing, quilting, notions, and machines. There will be a lot to learn, a lot to see, and lots of networking opportunities. I did get some new fabrics. One of them is from Indie Bindi Fabrics, and it's from Japan, and it is gorgeous. It is the baskets design by Nokogu. And that is the husband and wife design team that screen prints by hand. They design these and they screen print them themselves. It's a nice small little business. And I was really, like, my expectations were exceeded by this fabric, because, of course, fabric always looks better in person than it does from a photo on a computer, even though the photos are really great on that website. But feeling this fabric was amazing. It is so soft. I don't know. I think also because it is probably more of an apparel fabric. So it's definitely not like the feel of a quilting fabric. Quilting fabrics are sometimes sort of stiff, crunchy. I was going to say crunchy, but you know what I mean. And this fabric acted more like, I don't know, I would say a rayon, but it is cotton, just a really soft cotton. So anyway, beautiful, just a beautiful fabric. The other fabrics that I got were from Ducatilly, which is the Liberty Fabric online shop that I love to shop from. They had replenished some of their scrap bags. And I just got like a pack of, I think I got fat 16ths, which are 9 by 11 inches. These are great sizes to collect for English paper piecing projects and small projects like coasters or anything like that. And you get a good variety of fabrics at a nice price, because you don't have to invest in full yards, especially at the cost of what Tana Lawn is these days. Well, I'm in a similar situation with gardening as I am with my sewing, in that nothing's really been happening. I couldn't get around to planting the seeds. So here we are already in springtime, and it's not quite ready to plant out there yet, because we've just been having all of this whiplash weather where it's gone from warm, hot, back to freezing, cold. And today is actually a pretty cold day, but then in a couple of days, it's going to spike up into close to the 80s. But then I think it's going to come back down again to the 60s. So yeah, this is kind of like this roller coaster time of year with our weather. But that's why they say, you know, it's not safe to really plant anything outside until Mother's Day weekend, when we should be frost free by then. But the trees have been so gorgeous. They've all been flowering, and it's just so bizarre. I know I've said this before, but just amazes me every time that you see bare trees and then flowers pop out flowers on the trees don't last long. I wish they would last longer, but a couple of weeks if you're lucky. And then poof, the next time you look at it, it's full of leaves. It's like magic. It's just crazy. So it's nice to see all of the color popping around everywhere outside. I did order some shrubs back in January, and they just shipped them out now, and I should be getting those later on in the week or by the time this episode publishes. So I have a holly tree coming, or bush, I don't know. It's I think it's a tree, actually. It grows in a conical shape naturally. And that should have some red berries on it during the winter time. And I also ordered two of the red bark dogwood bushes that are hardy to my zone 5B. And I am looking forward to planting those. They're really small. They're going to be small when they arrive, and it will take several years for them to really grow into anything significant. But I just, it's something that I've been wanting for a long time, kind of like this, the garden just in the landscape just sort of keeps visual interest throughout the entire year, not just through like the summer blooming months. And it's really hard to accomplish without, you know, it takes a lot of planning, in other words, and you have to get to know what plants bloom at what time of year. And so a few years ago, I planted tulips again. And so those are actually up and in full bloom right now. But, you know, just to keep the garden sort of, you know, then what blooms in early spring and what blooms in early summer, and some of the ones that are like blooming throughout the summer into early fall are awesome. And then winter. So I've really like never incorporated anything for winter visual interest. So I'm really looking forward to these shrubs that will provide that. And it also helps like with the wildlife too. We do have more birds around here than ever before, just because of a lot of my neighborhood has done with their gardens. There's a lot of gardening enthusiasts in my neighborhood, which is really cool because, I mean, yeah, it is a city block and we're very close to each other, but we all have our little yards and people have really cool gardens. And like our neighbor has this tree that I've taken photos of and posted on my stories several times this year when it was winter. And with there was this one time a couple months ago where like there was like, it sounded like there were hundreds of robins birds in that tree, but they were just, you know, like I think they were gorging on these winter berries that were on the tree, but and it was seasonably warm few days at that time. Yeah. Anyway, that is my update on gardening, which isn't so much. I will finish up this segment and episode with what I'm watching and reading. We'll start with what I'm watching on Hulu. Shogun just had its season finale, season one, and I really liked that show. I enjoy international shows. It takes place in Japan in the 1600s. You will recognize a lot of the Japanese actors. There's a British actor that's the main character that I have not seen really before. He reminds me kind of about like Tom Hardy, but it's not Tom Hardy. And there's just great cinematography where it's filmed at, the costumes and the story is pretty gripping. So if you like that type of show, it's really good. And all the episodes are there on Hulu. A new show that recently came out on Max. It's funny. It's like a comedy because it's called Conan O'Brien Must Go. The comedian and previous late night show host Conan O'Brien travels. All of a sudden, there seems to be a lot of celebrities doing these travel shows, whether they're traveling or traveling to eat food. There's a lot of them out there now. Conan O'Brien's, though, is definitely different. And you laugh a lot of the time. The first episode, though, I didn't really laugh that much because he was so over the top. And he does go over the top a lot. The first episode is in Norway. I just felt like it was just too much. Then the second episode was really funny. I think it was Argentina. Argentina, I think, was my favorite episode. And then there was an episode in Ireland where he learned some of the strange lingo, sort of like pub talk there. But he's just really, really super funny. And you will laugh a lot, although you really have to sort of like, you know, just know that he does take some stuff a little far and goes over the top and maybe spends a little too much time trying to be funny there. It's a nice escape and it's funny. Apple TV, there's also a new show. It's a few episodes in and it's called Sugar. The show has Colin Farrell in it and he is a person who finds people. And there's a dog. He sort of inherits a dog. I don't want to give too much away. But I always love shows that have dogs in them, of course. And it's a good show so far. I mean, there's not too much to tell. I don't want to give too much away. But just so you know that he does find people and there's just some interesting situations and stories and people that he works with. All right. So that's pretty much it. I really haven't been watching that much TV lately. I have finished a book recently, and it's by Riley Sager. It's called Lock Every Door. This is a mystery thriller. It is pretty good. I figured out who one of the bad people were early on in the book, but there's a twist probably about three quarters of the way into the book, which I was not expecting, which really made it good. So I'm glad that they did that. And it is, it's different. So it's not your typical mystery storyline. And I liked it for that as well. If you like mystery thrillers, this one doesn't go too dark or anything. The main character is a young woman. She's like, what? I don't know, in her early 20s. And also, I'll tell you one other thing. It is centered in this building in New York City where it's exclusive to uber wealthy people. And you have to be on this waiting list to get in and actually to get an apartment in there. And think about if you've ever watched Only Murders in the Building. To me, reading this book, it was sort of like that. That's what I envisioned and pictured in my head. So it's interesting. It's really very good. And moving along to YouTube, there's a new channel that I have been watching a lot of videos from. I just kind of get into this rabbit hole and I tend to watch this sort of winding down the day and the night. And it has beautiful music. It's called Kiko Sabi, K-I-K-O-S-A-B-I. It is a Japanese woman in Japan, and her videos are always titled Visual Diary. She does a lot of, and it's, you read it, so it's captioned, and there's music throughout, really beautiful music. And she's a multi-crafter, like a lot of us are. So I love watching her, and she'll always make a lunch, which is also, you know, kind of gives you some ideas. And she does a lot of different crafts. So she crochets quite often. She will sew. She has done, some other things too. But it's just very relaxing to watch her. And I like watching what she makes and what she cooks. There's a cat that is not hers, but seems like every video starts off with this cat that's like on her front steps that she has become friends with. It's her neighbor's cat. So now the cat sort of comes by every morning and just kind of like greets her and they hang out for a little bit. Which is sort of cute too. So Kiko Sabi, Visual Diary. And then there's another thing, which I don't remember where I saw it at. It might have been Instagram, but I'm just going to tell you what it is about and a very good idea that I think I am going to try. It is how to make these teacup bird feeders. And it's something that you can do with just teacups that are either mismatched or, you know, sort of chipped or not perfect, some that you maybe would find at the Goodwill store. And he melts, either you can melt butter or lard, and then he puts bird seed into it and mixes it and then chills it overnight. And then, he pours it into the teacup, the melted butter or lard, and mixes the bird seed into it, puts those cups in the refrigerator, and then they solidify. And when that's done, he will take them outdoors and just hang them with some twine or whatever from branches from the teacup handle. And so the handle then will kind of sort of put it in a sideways position. And then the birds love it. So I thought it was a really cool idea, because years ago we did have a bird feeder and it did bring birds into the yard. But it also brought the squirrels, and the squirrels are very crafty, and they can find out how to get into most bird feeders, even the squirrel-proof ones. Although some of the squirrel-proof ones do work. It was just such a great idea, and they look so cute and pretty. It's just, I love really ingenious, creative things, and also things that you can upcycle. So that's it. That will do it for this episode. It's a bit of an extra long episode, but it also is the last episode of season 6, unless I pop back in the summer months. And then I will be back returning for season 7 in the fall as usual. I hope you all have a wonderful rest of the spring and enjoy your summer. Thank you all for listening. I really appreciate it. Until next time, keep making and decorating. Bye-bye. If you love the Make and Decorate with Stephanie podcast, check out my Patreon page at patreon.com/makeanddecorate. You'll get a bonus episode every month, even during the months that the show is on hiatus. Thanks for listening, and I will chat with you next time. Bye-bye.